When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Jessie Cruikshank, and I've always been told I have a face for podcasting. So I launched a podcast. It's called Phone a Friend because each week I'll break down the biggest stories in pop culture. But when I have questions, I get to phone a friend. I'll phone a royal watcher to find out why Prince Harry is acting like a real housewife. I'll phone a tween to please explain Euphoria. And maybe I'll even phone a Backstreet Boy to find out if I still have a chance. I don't? Okay. New episodes drop every Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, it's Dave here, and this is my wife, Kathy.
Hello.
This is The Cinemile, the podcast where we used to walk home from the movies.
But now we walk around our block.
Yes, we're out for our daily exercise. It's coming close to sunset, which means we all need to get indoors.
It does, and we need to watch a movie.
For the vampires come.
And there's a new movie out this week. So we've got a new movie to talk about. We're very excited about that.
Yeah, so we're locking down for the night with the new thing that Netflix are just pushing in front of all of our eyeballs every time you turn on the platform, which is Love, Wedding, Repeat, which, judging from the brief 10 seconds of a trailer that I couldn't help but watch while they forced it in front of me and the synopsis that I glanced at, seems to be some sort of Groundhog Day in a wedding.
I haven't even seen the trailer. I just saw that...
They pre-rolled the trailer at me, do you know?
I saw that it was a rom-com that Aisling Bea was in, so I was...
Aisling Bea, Olivia Munn is here.
Yeah, good, like, great, I'll watch it.
And also the title is clearly playing on Live, Die, Repeat, the title change of that Tom Cruise movie, Day After Tomorrow. No, what was it called?
I think it was called The Edge of Tomorrow.
The Edge of Tomorrow, that was
then
it,
then they changed the name when they released it on DVD, which is like the weirdest thing I've ever heard of.
The Live, Die, Repeat had been the tagline of that movie.
And it's a much better name than Edge of Tomorrow.
I think they only realised that after the movie
had come out.
But
you can't change the name of your movie, like.
Well, they
did. Once you've committed, you've committed. Like, I remember when I did my thesis for my master's, and I had it all printed and bound, and I'd obviously read it like 100 times, and then opened it at mistake on page 2. But it was done then. And that's what a movie title should be like.
You should have...
You've made the mistake. It's been in the cinema.
You should have ripped out page 2, put in a different page 2, and then retitled it to Live... write, rip out, repeat.
Yeah, wow, that was bad.
There you go.
But anyway, so we're going to watch it. We don't know anything about it other than we think... I think maybe... Well, judging by what you've just said, there might be something with time travel, which would be awesome.
Yeah. Basically, we don't know. We don't really care, but here we are.
We just want a new movie.
We're in the Netflix era.
All we want is a new movie to watch. That's all we ask
for. What
we
really want is to go to the cinema
to
watch the movies that were actually good, probably. Yeah. but here we are, where this is the situation.
And I know.
This
is... We miss the cinema so much. Like, we, like, funnily, like, obviously, being in lockdown is shit, and this whole situation is shit. But we feel like it might be affecting us slightly less than other people, purely from a point of view that we never used to do anything anyway because we've got two young kids, except we used to go to the cinema once a week.
Yeah.
It's like our biggest social outlet.
That was our weekly
treat. So that was our treat. So
but look,
really
we can't, no,
that.
We really,
we're not complaining.
We're not complaining.
But we miss the cinema.
We're not complaining. So many people out there have it much worse than we do.
Much worse. And all of our listeners
We hope you're all safe and and sound. But yes, we do collectively miss the cinema.
And we miss, all the big movies, like, because there was a couple of ones that were released, like The Invisible Man and like Military Wives. But that kind of seems to have stopped now. Come on,
no,
keep
there's
releasing
more,
them.
There's more coming.
I mean, there was Trolls 2, but we weren't going to go there.
No, we're going to be seeing more of that. We're going to get more of these. So hopefully we'll bring you some exciting new releases. But in the meantime, let's all watch Love, Wedding, Repeat.
I mean, if Netflix is pushing it on other people's TVs as hard as they have been on ours, the whole world will have seen it.
Speaking I'm optimistic that this thing will be good.
Did you see that Tiger King downloads were in the billions?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's a cultural phenomenon.
So this will probably be too, just because everyone's watching Netflix.
Incidentally,
right now.
Go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/thecinemile, and sign up and support the show if you're interested, and you'll get our thoughts on Tiger King. We did a whole episode on it.
Yeah.
With Kathy's sister.
We
Elizabeth.
Went a bit mad and talked about Tiger King for an hour.
For about an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we're just about to embark on that new Netflix dating show because.
Oh, yeah, let's do that. What's it called again?
The, I don't
it's
know.
Called it's People called sexy, Not sexy Having time. Sex on an Island.
Yeah.
Is it?
I don't know.
It's
what
Love
it's called.
Island without the sex.
Yeah.
That's
so.
What this show
but anyway,
is.
But anyway, back onto this movie. What's it called again?
All right. No, come on. We don't know anything about this movie. What do you want to talk about? Let's just go watch it.
Okay, we're going to go watch it and then we're going to record the review tomorrow when we're out for our daily walk. Okay?
Yeah, because by the time we finish this, it'll be too late to go to bed.
Yeah. Okay. Also, do you know what? Like, we do podcasts on our sofa, but like, we love podcasting while walking. That's like what we've always done.
That's kind of the point of this show. So we're going to try and keep that up.
Yeah.
So our daily exercise tomorrow will also be podcasting and it'll be our thoughts on this movie.
But
so
also,
see you tomorrow.
One other thing. Sorry, I'm just annoying you now. I'm just trying to drag it out because I'm
wrap up,
so excited to be doing the podcast. I was thinking about it. I reckon we must be like one of the few podcasts left in the world.
Where full
the
stop. Host, where the, we're the, no, one no. of the few podcasts left in the
no,
world. They're all
more,
gone.
More podcasts than
so
ever.
So don't
now.
Listen to anything else.
No, that's not what I was saying. I'm saying that we must be one of the few podcasts left in the world where the hosts actually record together. Everyone's recording them remotely.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. So tune into the cinema if you want to hear two people who are together in person out for a walk.
Yes, we're able
these
to touch
two unusual
each other
things.
Like this.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm poking Kathy.
Thanks for poking me. Right, okay. Bye.
Bye.
Hi. Oh, wow, you look gorgeous.
Hello, how are you?
I didn't know you had a new boyfriend. I'm so glad you've moved on from that last guy. What was his name, Chaz?
No, I'm Chaz.
Oh, my God. Have you gone out with two Chazzes in a row?
You remember Dina, my American friend that you met in Rome?
Yeah.
She's here.
What?
Jack.
Hey, I used to ask about you all the time.
I used to ask about you too. Oh, God. Got a bit of a problem. Mark Fisher. He's saying that he's in love with me and he's threatening to go full on psycho and ruin my wedding. This is the sleep medicine that I've been taking. It would knock him out for hours.
Me?
Just put a couple of drops of that in his champagne glass.
There has to be another way.
There is no other way.
There is.
There
has to be.
Please.
There has to be.
Haley.
Hey. Your sister is an angel, isn't she?
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Minutes have passed for you and a day has passed for us.
And
it's now tomorrow. Or today.
It's almost it's like one... the edge of tomorrow.
Oh, hello. So we watched that movie, died and repeated it. Alright, quick synopsis then. If you don't, like, no spoilers yet, as always. We'll turn on to Spoiler Street. Spoiler Street is still not in the quarantine zone.
Spoiler
so
Street is
go
just on our block now.
Yeah. This movie is pretty much as we suspected. Not as we suspected, like we figured it all out. It was what the synopsis
said.
Yeah, it's basically set at a wedding and then it's it's more, do you know what though? It's not Groundhog Day or Edge of Tomorrow in which a character is aware of the changing circumstances. This is Sliding Doors. It should have been called Wedding Doors or Sliding Wedding.
That would be Sliding Wedding.
Sliding
that
wedding.
Should be a movie title.
Yeah.
That's this isn't, awful. Or Wedding Doors makes no sense.
This isn't...
so you should not
this
come
isn't
up with
the
movie
same,
name.
No, but I'm just telling you, it's misleading. They chose a misleading title which implies a Groundhog Day scenario when in fact it's just... showing you variations of the same situations, multiple possibilities of what could have happened, but nobody's aware of them. Nobody's living those possibilities with the understanding of the one true timeline or anything. So it's ultimately, for me, that's less interesting because there's no stakes in that then. It's just like, oh, there's a million different universes and here's a few possibilities. It's like, yeah, all right.
Okay, well, that's not really a synopsis of the movie, which is what I think you were trying to do. A synopsis of the movie is... a woman's getting married in Italy to an Italian dude, but she's English. And as the wedding plays out, we see multiple variants of what could go down on the day.
Yeah.
And it stars... Who does it star, Dave? I told Dave to pull up IMDb because I couldn't remember any of their names. However, obviously
Sam.
I know Aisling B's name. She's an Irish comedian that we really like and she's brilliant in this, as we would have expected.
So the lead is Sam Claflin, who I recognise from The Hunger Games. Who
yeah.
Who is Finn, right?
Yeah.
And I haven't seen him since then. What was that, 10 years ago?
I've seen him in a couple of things, but he's not, like, he's kind of like a leading, he's, like, there. I think we both took away from this, the absolute best thing about this movie
The cast. Yeah.
The cast is great. Really good. So everyone, let's quickly chat through all who all the cast are. He's the brother of the woman getting married, and he is the star. If anyone's the star, albeit it's an ensemble, he is the star of the movie.
And it's him and his meet cute with Olivia Munn, who's a friend of his sister.
And they
re-meet at the wedding.
She's
very good.
I know you never really watch Newsroom, and I hate watch the whole thing. Olivia Munn was one of the only good people in Newsroom. She really was.
Well, Jeff Daniels was good. Like, Newsroom had...
Yeah, but the more you watch Newsroom, by the end, she was the only watchable character in it.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Him and Olivia Munn are sort of the leads. You've also... And then it's a sort of a host of supporting characters who each kind of have their own plots.
Well, who was the sister? I didn't recognise her. She's the only actor I hadn't seen before.
She is Eleanor Tomlinson, who I also don't...
Now you have to click into her IMDb and tell me.
And welcome back to IMDb Scrolling, the podcast.
Anyway, she was really good as the sister. We don't need to go through what she's
in. I don't know who she is.
She played the sister.
She's good. Everyone's good. Everyone's good in this. And then there's a very strong... comedic supporting cast, including Aisling B, Tim Key, who a lot of people would know as Alan Partridge's co-host on his Mid-Morning Madness
show.
He's
so funny in this. He's really good in this.
He's a real standout. Also, shout out to Alan Mustafa, who's the lead from the brilliant BBC comedy People Just Do Nothing, about a group of rappers doing a pirate radio station, which if anyone hasn't seen... And you've got some time on your hands, as I'd imagine. Go watch that. It's on Netflix. That's a very funny show. So everyone... And Frida Pinto in this, famous from Slumdog Millionaire. Like, so very interesting cast. Very interesting...
And Joel Fry. He's kind of the lead best man.
Yes.
So basically, the best thing
Joel
about...
Joel Fry, very good in this.
Best thing about this is the cast. We both got a lot of laughs out of it. We laughed repeatedly, which is relatively unusual for us when we watch a comedy, to be honest, because we tend to kind of, I don't know, we just not find them very funny. So this definitely passed, as they would say.
What's the headline there? We don't find comedies funny.
Most comedies aren't very funny. Like, it's almost like when you watch a movie that has a dark humour streak to it, you might laugh more in a drama. But when a movie's trying to be funny, it can be painful sometimes. And this does pass like the six laughs.
You're saying that comedies aren't funny enough these days.
Yeah, they're trying to be funny, and when you watch someone trying to be funny and failing, it's often just really painful.
Yeah.
But this was genuinely funny, particularly the stuff with Aisling B, the guy from Alan Partridge, and the guy we just mentioned, Brian Fry. Those three were very funny.
Yeah.
So that's good. The premise of the movie, we were not in spoilers yet, but I felt got a little thin. And I do feel like there's going to be inevitable wannabe comparisons to Four Weddings and a Funeral that would be undeserved, because it ain't no Four Weddings and a Funeral. And I felt bad for the lead actor, Sam Claflin, because he's actually really good in this, and he is not trying to do a Hugh Grant impression, and at no time does he even teeter towards doing that. However, because it's about a wedding and he is like a posh English guy who's slightly gawkish
and tripping over his words a bit, and
you can't help but compare him to Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and a Funeral, but it's not his fault and he's not trying to knock it off. So I think you're best off watching it, just erase Four Weddings and a Funeral from your mind and don't bother trying to compare it, because it's not going to be favourable and it's not really fair.
Yeah, here we are comparing
it's not
it.
Fair
you've begged the comparison,
but
by
I
inviting
haven't
it.
Begged the comparison, yeah. They have begged the comparison.
Okay,
come
fair.
On I by mean, casting him, he looks like Hugh Grant.
Also, look, that the shadow of that movie looms large.
Exactly.
I think I agree with you. I think Sam Claflin as the lead is he's good in this, and he's really trying. Like, I really admired him as an actor. Like, he's like committing physically as well. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of physical comedy in this, and I felt my sense of him was, and I don't know, I don't know his sort of CV or whatever you call it that well, but I sense that he's not comedy's not his forte as such, and it's not instantly familiar to him. So I felt he was stretching, and for the most part, I think he did a great job and achieved it. There were a few moments I thought he was like gurning a little too much. He got a bit Jim Carrey at points.
But then he's playing multiple different kind of timelines, so you're doing quite wildly different stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why, I guess, for his character, he was stretching more. Whereas Aisling B, who was funny in every scene, she didn't have to change what she was doing.
That's another problem with a comparison that is unfair but can't be helped. He's surrounded by some very talented comedic actors. So I think when you're... So I think he feels like a dramatic actor flexing comedy, which is actually tends to be a harder transition. I think you get when you see comedy actors stretching into dramatic roles, they tend to make that transition a lot easier.
Actually, we're watching, on a side note, and we'll be covering this on our Patreon, but there's a new show, Devs, that's launched on BBC that we're really enjoying. And who's the actor in it?
Nick Offerman.
He's
of Parks
brilliant.
And Rec, etc.
So he's known for Parks and Rec, and he's a comedic actor, and he's being brilliant as a dramatic actor in Devs.
Yeah.
So totally recommend that, by the way. But anyway, yeah, I agree with you. It's harder for a guy like that in a comedy. Whereas, like, and I know I said you shouldn't compare it to Hugh Grant, and it's not fair, but
Hugh Grant, here we are. You keep
Hugh Grant's
circling
really
back to
funny.
This.
He always pulls off comedy. Like, I know you haven't seen Paddington 2, but that's kind of the peak of him being funny. But like Bridget Jones, he's funny. Like Four Weddings, he's funny. Notting Hill, he's funny. So anyway, I'll stop the Hugh Grant comparisons. They're not fair.
Hugh Grant's awesome. What, no argument.
Will we go to spoiler streets? We can talk about the premise a bit, because...
Well, do you want to finish talking about the cast? Because I will. I want to give another shout out to Olivia Munn, who...
She's brilliant.
On the subject of sort of comedy and drama, she's someone who I've seen do both and kind of does both here, but she's not an overtly comedic character like a lot of the supporting characters in this. She's the straight romantic lead.
Yeah,
but
she's brilliant.
But like, she's such a good actress because it's not a big performance, and they don't actually give her much to do. It's actually very
she does a lot
character.
With facial tics, doesn't she?
She does.
Yeah.
She's, but also what I really appreciated with her is that she was an excellent comedy straight man.
Yeah.
And I mean that in the traditional sense of the, you know, the Laurel and Hardy, the, you know, the straight comedic partner, the unfunny one. She's a brilliant, like, because you need the straight man. You need the springboard for the reaction.
Particularly when she's against the Alan Partridge guy.
Yes, Tim Key. So her and Tim Key were working so well together.
Yeah.
But actually, when you put her with Sam Claflin, they were charming and romantic. So that's the sign, I think, of a brilliant actor, is somebody who can not only like do a great performance themselves, but like she was making other people's performances better.
She was. And then the most kind of physically outlandish ones, I think, were, did we say his name was Brian Fry? I've just forgotten, on IMDb. And Aisling B, like, they're properly kind of physically comedically funny as well, so they kind of brought like the bigger laughs in. So I think, yeah, all right. Joel Fry, sorry. And then
there's a moment where he's trying to stay awake
and he's asleep.
I've never seen somebody act somebody
falling asleep,
fighting sleep so well.
It was so
while
good.
Trying to have a conversation.
And then Frida
wonderful.
Pinto was really good too, because I
was,
only know her from some Dog Millionaire, where she's like quite an earnest character, I guess. She's really good in this, and she's playing against the guy you mentioned from the Pirate Radio Show thing. Forgotten the name of.
Yeah, who's also, I mean, he's straight,
he's, really
he's got
funny.
A straight up comedy role,
yeah,
but is very
so they're
funny.
Really good. So yeah, all praise to the cast. And honestly, before we get to Spoiler Street, if you haven't watched it, do you know what, it's just great to have a new, like we talked about on Long Shot, it's just great to have a movie to watch.
Yeah, I think, look,
and you will get a few laughs, and it's what all rom-coms should be. It's like about 95 minutes.
No, it's not. It's about an hour and 45, close to two.
Okay, 105 minutes, but it's not as long as some, like, you know, a lot of the cinematic rom-coms now, like we often talk about, for example, God, like the ones with Jason, what's his name?
Jason Segel,
those kind of ones that like air on to sometimes being 2.5 hours long, like The 5-Year Engagement.
It's 100 minutes, it says.
Yeah,
it's not. Yeah,
it's a decent duration.
But it felt long. I didn't think it felt long. I think this movie could have trimmed a lot of fat. For instance,
I don't think
it takes an hour for the actual sort of hook of this to even happen.
Well, that's what, I don't think it was, I think it was the right duration, but I think that they took too long, like the pacing was a little bit off.
Yeah,
way
off.
It took too long to get to the meat, and I appreciate they were trying to set up the characters, and at the end of the day, as we said, it is a character movie.
If you want it in wedding terms, the problem with that this movie is the food was served, the speeches were done first, and the food was served afterwards, and the food was served too late. So we were waiting too long for the food to arrive, and then the speeches went on too long.
I'm waiting for this to end because it's such a boring metaphor.
Come on, that's something
terrible.
There.
Absolutely nothing there. And then there was one other thing I wanted to talk about before we got to Spoiler Street, but I've totally forgotten now. I've lost all brain
Good
power.
Good podcasting.
I'm sorry. I spend 100% of my time with a toddler and a baby, right?
You're saying,
so my brain is addled.
You're saying you would recommend it like as something to watch.
I recommend it because it's a new movie, it's funny, and there's a really good cast. And I just think that they dropped the ball a little bit in terms of the execution of what was a good core idea. I don't think they executed it as well as they could have.
And I'm saying I don't actually think it's a great movie. I think it's an okay movie with a really good cast with some good jokes in it.
Agreed.
So it certainly is an easy way to pass 100 minutes. So if you're looking for something light and unchallenging and you'll get a few laughs and kind of enjoy watching these people have fun, then go for it. But I could pick it apart for hours, which we're about to do now in Spoiler Street.
Just the kind of the high concept stuff we can pick apart.
I wanted it to be better, and I was watching it like as I wanted to edit this movie. Do you know what I mean? There was just so many points I just wished it was like tighter and funnier in parts. And it just wasn't as good as I wanted it to be.
It had all
and it
the
wasn't
makings.
As good as this cast deserved.
It had all the makings of becoming a classic, but it's not hit the right notes for that, which is a shame.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things we did observe watching it, now we haven't looked up anything on like production values or timelines or anything, but we felt like it had been made relatively cheaply and relatively quickly. And that is no shade. All movies have different budgets, and you know, it was just a guess on our part, but it looked like it wasn't a very expensive movie. And I wonder if there was just a very short timeline in terms of production and the edit where like things that could have been tweaked maybe weren't. I don't know, that's pure speculation.
Look, you don't know. And look, love and blood and sweat and tears goes into making any movie.
Yeah.
So like, I just think well done for the filmmakers to have made this at all, and to first of all, any film that gets made is a miracle.
Any film that gets released during a pandemic is lucky, because it will get huge consumption on Netflix.
Well, exactly.
And, honestly,
and it was enjoyable, and I quite liked it.
We
so
like properly laughed out loud, like. So that's honestly, these days laughs are few and far between. So
and everything that follows is just the kind of pedantic nitpicky detail that you people love to hear, and that if the filmmaker Dean Craig, who wrote and directed this, ever does listen to this, I sincerely apologise. So congratulations for making your film. I've never done it, and now I'm going to tell you everything you did
wrong.
Now
we're on Spoiler Street, okay? So turn it off if you haven't seen it and go and watch it. Right.
Spoilers now for Love, Wedding, Repeat. I do genuinely feel bad when I like nitpick a movie in a broadcast format. I try never to like tweet anything mean about movie. One of my pet hates on social media is when you see someone saying something they don't like about a movie or just trashing a movie and then tagging in the filmmakers or the actors. Don't like that. That's lousy. And I mean, obviously this is the whole point of the internet is an open forum of discussion. We love discussing movies and sharing our thoughts and opinions. That's why we're doing this. But I think that at the core of this, there's somebody who, in this instance, a man called Dean Craig, who wrote and directed this movie. I think it was based on a remake, but
it is based on another movie. We saw that in the credits.
Again, something I've never done, and I think it's a brilliant achievement. But that's all the caveats, so that I feel more comfortable with saying everything I don't like about it. So why the hell bother even doing the sliding doors thing at all? It added nothing and was pointless. Just give me a straight up rom-com plot.
But it also didn't make sense.
Didn't deliver.
I think if you're going to do, say, if you take Sliding Doors as an example, The Sliding Doors is a brilliant movie, by the way. I absolutely love it. If you take Sliding Doors, Sliding Doors moment happens very early in the movie.
And it commits to it for the whole movie, and you get to watch both of them.
Exactly.
Parallel.
And you get to watch it for a really, really long time, and you get to see both to its conclusion, and it's two timelines. The Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow thing, again, is quite early, and we get to see loads of really interesting scenarios play out. This one, by the time we got to it, it was rushed and also didn't make sense. It's just some kind of vague voiceover of a posh English woman
Judy
saying,
Dench, I swear.
I don't know who it was, but saying, because there's eight people at a table and it's like, do you know, Dave, please stop trying to Google who voiced it. It doesn't matter.
I'm on the IMDb.
Basically, it's like, do you know how many possible combinations of eight there is? Because that's how many combinations of this scene could have played out. But Dave, please stop. But what I didn't understand is, okay, you're saying there's 8 factorial, as I remember from school maths.
Oh, good.
Opportunities at this table based on who takes the drug because of who was sitting where. So what? Like, are you telling us? Are you telling us that they all happened? Like, are we in kind of a sci-fi parallel world thing?
Well, that's the multiverse theory. They did all happen.
But But or are you telling us that their first one happened and then this is a fantasy of what should have gone down? Like, I didn't understand what was... I don't know why we watched different versions, because they didn't make it clear.
If I'm being generous based on what I'm reading from what the end of this movie, the dialogue's all about chance, and you've got to take your chance, and, you know, he missed his chance at the beginning in Rome, and then she says to him, you know, we missed our chance, it wasn't meant to happen, and then he sort of says... And then he gets the speech from his friend who's like, the different blah, blah, blah. And he's like, okay, I'm going to run out and do the take my chance and seize my moment. So it's like the idea is that true love is so... The chances of two people finding each other and true love is so slight. And all these different situations need to happen to get to there, that you kind of just need to take those moments when they arrive. That's what I think the movie was trying to say. I'm totally with you. I didn't think that the whole thing just felt inconsequential.
It
felt gimmicky. When it happens, and they do the rewind moment, and then they're like, and then the things get mixed up, and then we get this very fun little montage where you're like, you see all the different, like, suddenly. He took the sleeping pill, then she took the sleeping pill, and then, oh, these people are hooking up, and it just gives you this glimpse into all this mad stuff.
And that was the stuff we wanted to see.
And then it was like, oh yeah, forget about all that. Here's the last one. And it was like, what? So you're actually only giving us
two
different versions when you spend an hour movie. You spend an hour getting us to this moment and spending all the time building up all these sub-characters when you really could have efficiently have done that in about 20 to 30 minutes, which should have been done.
Yeah.
And then
shown us
then
loads of
show
versions.
Us a few different scenarios.
Like in Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah, Live, Die, Repeat. Do you remember?
Like, don't copy the name of a movie
that's
you are nowhere
you.
Near as good
yeah,
as.
Exactly.
That's done this so much better.
Yeah.
It's a really bad idea because it set our expectations subconsciously too high. Now, I didn't think a rom-com released straight to Netflix was going to be as good as Live, Die, Repeat, but the expectation was sitting there rattling around in my brain.
Yeah.
And it's a bad idea. Don't ever invite that kind of comparison on yourself. Just don't do it.
Hallelujah.
And the other thing that really annoyed me about the final timeline is actually our protagonist, right, is, what's his name, Sam Claflin. And he's grand, right, don't mind him. But Olivia Munn's character, I can't remember the name of either of their characters, she is like the perfect woman, right? She's amazing. He's grand. So you're not necessarily rooting for her to get with him, but because he's our character, we should be rooting for him to get with her.
Yeah.
But in the version where they end up together, he takes a sleeping pill, and when she's a really good actress as well, she's talking about how her mother died and how traumatic it was, and he falls asleep, right? Firstly, there is no coming back from that without an explanation, which he never gave her, okay?
Yeah.
So he just appears horrible in that really very distressing
scene
for her.
All he had to say was, I took a sedative,
so
by
he
mistake.
Didn't, but he didn't say that, so it makes no sense that she would end up with him. Secondly, he's taking the sedative and he's trying to make himself sick in a very funny scene. And he ends up getting his friend to like stick his fingers down his throat. So Olivia Munn walks in on him knelt down on the floor of a toilet while a guy stands in front of him and he's sucking the guy's fingers. So clearly she thinks they're getting it on, right?
Yeah.
So it was
funny.
So it was really funny. So she sees him in apparently like a gay scene in a bathroom. And secondly, he falls asleep when she's talking about the trauma with her dead mother. So then why, when he runs after her in the end, would she be in any way interested in him? That's the bit that made no sense, because he didn't say, look, I was he didn't explain anything that happened to her. And secondly, what I don't understand about any of it is they had this amazing weekend in Rome 3 years ago, and at the very end of it, somebody came over, started talking to him, ruined the moment. They never kissed and they never connected. To be honest, I wouldn't be into a guy if we'd that great a weekend, fine, at the end of it you didn't get to kiss or, you know, whatever. Could have got the number off her sister. He could have told that guy to F off.
Yeah.
Like, that in itself is all very unattractive. Like, it shows that he's someone who just kind of sits back and waits for, like, things to happen to him, which isn't particularly attractive. And I would imagine, particularly to a woman like her, who's, like, a very accomplished war journalist and correspondent and flies all over the world, like, as if she's going to be interested in some dweeb who can't even get her phone number off his sister, like.
Yeah.
So basically, at the end, I found it completely unrealistic that she would end up with him because he has nothing going on for him.
Yeah. I completely agree with that. Wow, what
and it's
a
not
what
about
an
the actor did it really good. It's about the character.
So, I think
I just really want to buy a couple. I want to ship them. I want to be rooting for a couple when I'm watching a rom-com, and I just was like, I hope she doesn't end up with him. That's all I could think. Because he had no point, just said to anyone, look. Oh yeah, this is the most annoying bit. This guy shows up at the wedding, the kind of the antagonist of the movie shows up to spoil the wedding, right?
Yeah.
At no point do they just kick him out of the wedding.
To get him out of there, it made no sense.
We'll make a scene if you kick him out. And no, it won't, because you've all gone into another room to have the speeches. He's still in the other room on his own.
But also,
so you just get security to discreetly come and take him out.
So what are you talking about? He'll make more of a scene if he stays. Mm-hmm. And then you've ruined your wedding day.
So at no point did he say to anyone, look, like his best mate who was there, who's like a really tall big guy, would he not be like, look, will you just help me get rid of this guy? Instead he goes through all this farce of like spiking people's drinks and like trying to make himself vomit. And even in the timeline when the friend took the sedative and he was trying to give like the maid of honor speech and he was out of it, at no point did Sam Claflin even go up and say like, listen, don't go on stage, like I'll do the speech for you. Like he was the most like, what's the word, is it milquetoast or something? He's the most wishy-washy character. Like things just kept happening and he just stood there gawking, and I was like, I just find him very unattractive.
I think the problem is that's a screenplay in where like funny stuff, idea for funny stuff, now funny stuff needs to happen, and then there's the character work to get there isn't really gelling. Like there's no, the dots haven't been connected to get from X to Z, and then what you end up with is plot contrivances that don't make sense.
But they're still funny, like we still laugh.
Yeah, as in,
just didn't buy them.
Exactly. The scenarios themselves and the writing is funny. Like the dialogue in this is funny.
I wondered if a lot of them ad
libbed.
I was thinking some of the actors might have ad libbed some of it.
Maybe.
Because it was very funny.
But I felt like the screenplay is strong when it's created these characters and these situations. That's good. But I think the sort of the framework of the plotting of this movie is where it falls down.
And it does need to hang on the lead characters and like. The sister and the brother, that just their actions didn't make sense with the guy coming into the wedding, and that it kind of hinged on the whole scenario was about a guy at the wedding they're trying to get rid of, but they just, it didn't make sense that he was let stay at the wedding and got a table set for him and was sitting down at the wedding.
I couldn't
let go of that.
Yeah.
I just, like, if someone had shown up at our wedding like that, it would have been like absolutely throw him out, like.
And that's why,
like, he was on loads of drugs, he was really aggressive, he was threatening to spoil the wedding, like there's just no way.
What's the name of it? It's the suspension of disbelief is the idea. The willing suspension of disbelief is the, it's the name for the thing in your head that allows you, when you're watching a piece of fiction on TV, that allows you to switch off the part of your brain that says these are actors on a sound stage delivering lines from a screenplay that was written by a person that's been performed. You know, all the things that your brain logically knows, and the thing that allows you to get wrapped up in the escapism of fiction. And that's a very delicate thing. And as soon as that is shattered in any way, it's very hard to get it back.
It's really hard to
get
it back.
That's what happened both of us.
It's funny because we just did a massive review of Face Off over on our Patreon, but when we were saying, one of the really good things about Face Off is that it's ludicrous that they swap faces, but they just deal with it really quickly. They swapped faces.
Yeah.
This is the medical reason why, and now on with the plot. And we're like, okay. Whereas if they had spent 45 minutes just telling us more and more ridiculous science about how these people swapped faces, we would have gone, this is stupid.
That's a really...
You just need to do it really quickly. And like with this, they just needed to, for some reason, like, if you want to make it that this guy stays at the wedding, have it that the groom knows him as well, right? There's an investment from the groom's family. There's a reason she can't kick him out.
Work,
the groom doesn't know him.
I agree.
So no one cares if you kick him
out.
You
have to work a little harder or come up with a tangible or reasonable explanation for what you want to happen. And that's what didn't happen here. And I think Face Off's such a good and unexpected example of that. Because you also have to be... It's the willing suspension of disbelief. So if you're you have to, if you can accept something absurd because for the greater good, and you're just like, okay, movie, I'll go with you, then that's fine. But like, this was this movie kept cropping up these little things that like it didn't make sense for a character to do that.
Like,
why
Olivia
would he have done
Munn
that?
Olivia Munn forgiving him because for falling asleep when she said about her mom dying. It's unforgivable.
Exactly.
And, before they kissed, he had to say to her. It's this way, Dave's lost. Had to say to her...
It's not. It's that way.
It's this way.
It's down there. You're completely wrong.
Basically, he had to say a line where he explained that before they kissed, and maybe it was on an edit room floor or somewhere. There's another scene where him and the best friend also look like they're kissing, and I felt like at that point she was supposed to walk by and see that as well and think they were together again, but then nobody walked by and saw it, so I was like, why is this scene even
yeah,
here?
Exactly.
Like, it was just, I feel like they almost probably shot so much of all the different variants that by the time they went to put it together it was like, fuck it,
yes,
we'll just show two of them.
That's a really good point as well, because often a film can be found in the edit is the expression, and I think this film could have been saved by a really good editor.
Yeah.
So if you could have a screenplay missing some of this stuff and it can be salvaged later, but that wasn't happening here. And I think back to the face-off example, which is, where are you going now? what are you doing?
We're trying to like make our block as interesting as possible back to and the, loop down alleyways.
Back to the face-off example. The reason that isn't really a problem is because the movie tells you, okay, there is technology that allows two people to swap their faces. And for the moment, you're like, is there? That stupid? That doesn't make sense.
And, yeah, but then they say, there's these brilliant new anti-inflammatories that help you recover really quickly. Yeah. And we're so like, cool. Like,
all right. I'll wave my hand and it's fine. But what it doesn't do is, like, if Castor Troy suddenly did something noble in that movie, then you'd be like, would he have done that? That doesn't really feel like him.
Yeah, the characters always feel true.
Yeah, so this was like, yeah, the characters were kind of true to themselves, but they were ignoring common sense.
But I don't think the lead guy was true to himself, right? The parents are both dead. He's protective older brother. He does not fuck about doing 100 different things instead of getting rid of this guy who's there to ruin the sister's wedding.
Yeah.
He gets rid of the guy. He doesn't go to the bar to have a drink. He doesn't hang out with his mates. He doesn't faff about like trying to lock him in a cupboard, because at that point you've caused way more of a scene than if you just got security to take him out. For me, on your sister's wedding day, no matter how much you might fancy your friend, if you've made a big fuss about you're walking her down the aisle, your parents are dead, it's really profound and you're really protective of her and you're always getting her out of messes, your number one goal for the day is to get rid of that guy. And because every time he didn't get rid of that guy, we were just like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But we need to go, because we need to go home, because my sister's very kindly looking after our children.
Well, thank you for listening. I really enjoyed talking about that for some reason.
Basically, if anything is to do with like timelines or time travel or like parallel timelines, we are all over it.
Yeah.
Like, we've had far too many arguments in our marriage about like continuous time theory. Like any sort of time travel, we'll debate it for
days. Because I'm fine with time travel rules as long as they're consistent.
Yes, Dave, I know
that.
And
often movies aren't.
And honestly, looking at you back to the future. Again, I actually really enjoyed this movie for like the chats we had about it. So I do totally recommend it.
Guys, and let you chat to us now. message us at The Cinemile on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thecinemile@gmail.com. I'd imagine a lot of people have watched this.
I would too, so let us know what you thought.
It's getting pushed hard.
Hope you enjoyed it and had as much fun chatting about it as we did, and enjoyed the cast as much as we did. And if you haven't already done so, we would absolutely love if wherever you listen to the podcast, you drop us a review. We really appreciate it. And we hope you guys are all doing okay in what is now weeks and weeks into lockdown.
You don't even know. I don't know.
But depending what country you're in. Yeah, hopefully you can enjoy this and get a bit of escapism.
Yeah, stay, look after yourselves, everyone. Stay safe, and we'll see you guys
next week. Next time we can try and find another movie to watch.
Bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Kim Holderness.
And I'm Ben Holderness.
We host the Holderness Family Podcast every Tuesday.
You may know us from the silly videos that we make online.
Or a book about marriage called Everybody Fights.
Or as winners of season 33 of The Amazing Race.
Still can't believe that happened. Yeah. Listen, we do a lot of stuff, but our podcast is our most favorite thing.
Yeah, because every week we get to sit down face to face, talk to each other about marriage, family, mental health, or just anything that we want to know more about.
Sometimes we have expert interviews, sometimes it's just us, but our goal is to bring some joy and laughter and to your life every week.
Our other goal is that maybe you will learn something as well.
Right, so search the Holderness Family Podcast and check out our most recent episodes. We have one about staying organized with creators of The Home Edit.
And one about being diagnosed with ADHD as an adult.
We hope you'll join us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.